We are on. Hold on. Hey, Sasha, you there?
No, I am, yeah, but I muted myself again. I hate this mic, I swear to God. Yeah, I'm here for a change. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Right, we'll start the show now then. Brilliant, Ray.
I was waiting for the other intro music that they always use.
I didn't know what was going on. I hadn't known for days. It's been too hot. My brain's been boiled in my own head. I'm like Gollum hanging around in my cave, you know, in the damp and the dark, and I've been outside and it burns us. So, yeah, I'm here this week. That's a bit of a drama.
Good to hear you.
Time.
I missed you.
Oh, no, you did very well. You think you've done it before?
Listen, man, I've been laid up. I got this nasty infection in my foot, and I've just been completely out of it for like the last month. You know?
Yeah.
It's bad. It's nasty.
Oh, you need a holiday. If anybody wants to donate a holiday to Guy, please feel free. Well, I've been really looking forward to tonight. I was looking forward to talking to Brett as well last time because his story's great, isn't it? And he's a really lovely guy. Again, today we've got Thomas Reed on. And I watched the video. There's a video of the Reed family story. I didn't really know what to expect. It's a case that has passed me by. I've been so involved in, you know, the UK scene. And watched this video on YouTube. Oh, my God. I absolutely lost the plot completely. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was like everything I've ever heard, everything I've ever seen. And also, there's one bit with the, involving the car that just completely made an event in my life make sense. You know what I mean? So I just kind of went a bit sideways, got drunk and passed out. Woke up the next day, I felt fine. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, it's all right. But, you know, I can read anything all day long. I can read people's descriptions all day long. But when you see something that you have seen, but you don't know how you're seeing it, how these memories are in your head, you have to assume that you've seen something or it's a dream. And I kind of think, well, it felt really real, but I'd gone to bed, so maybe, hopefully, it was a dream. And then I'm watching that video and I've seen something in it and I just went, whoa, oh, my God, that was not a dream then, that particular event that I had, you know.
Right.
So that's what, because, you know, it's easier to sort of half pretend that none of it's real. And I sort of do that, I think, to be able to get through my day. It's like, oh, well, it's not happening now, so it's not really. It's all behind me, you know. Like, but then sometimes some things just pull it all up and, you know, and I think, oh, I've got onto a level with it now. I'm okay now. I can talk about it fine. I can la, 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 la. And then all of a sudden I see something and I just go right back to square one, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I'm only there for a minute instead of like 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
Carrying on like that. So, Thomas, welcome to the show. Thanks for being a guest.
Thank you, Sasha. How you doing, Guy?
Hey, good, man.
Yeah, been looking forward to talking to you.
My
even
God.
Though you scared me after death with your video.
Yeah, I was getting scared just waiting for it to air. I wasn't quite sure how they were going to perceive it or how they were going to, you know, what they were going to keep and edit and everything. So I actually...
Yeah.
They did a pretty good job with it, all in all. You know, you never know.
Oh, I think so. I thought it was a really good production.
Thank you.
Quite a lot of effort went into it as well. It was really realistic, a lot of it. And, you know, your brother as well, so sincere. You just, you know, there's the way people talk and there's a look on the face, you know. And just, I really felt for him, you know. It must have been terrifying.
Well, he actually picked up the and ran with it because I was actually not feeling well. So he wasn't even prepared to do it. He just sat down and you know, just spoke from the heart. And in some respects, I think it worked out better.
Yeah, it was really good the way it was. you know, when you came in at the end as well and started talking about, oh my God, I don't even know where to start with it. So I think really, if you start off telling us a little bit about yourselves, and we'll take it from there.
Just about a little snapshot of our case in general then, or?
Just about how, you know, what's kind of happened here and how you came to be, you know, doing what you're doing now and talking about it publicly, you know.
All right. I think the best way to describe this is, you know, our events or what happened with us really are probably tame in some respect, but it's the what surrounds it that has made this so, you know, that whole, you know, the death of my father and everything. I mean, we had a horse farm back in Sheffield, Massachusetts, and we had 80 acres, and it wasn't far from a country club. The country club was about 7 miles away. And we had a couple of encounters, I guess. You can count them on one hand. It was like three or four, actually, within about a four-year period. And it wasn't just our family that this involved. And I think that's something that I don't really talk about very much, but it was something that was so well-known back there. I mean, a lot of these children were actually talking about it in school when I rode on the bus. I mean, there were sketches that were drawn and hung in the classroom. My mother owned a, you know, restaurant. And, of course, at the time, my mother was single. So, you know, she got a lot of flack from the, you know, the country boys up in Sheffield, Massachusetts. And it got to the point, you know, that we ended up having to sell the farm. So in the 80s, actually, it was my father was now in office, and he was a lawyer. And we were not to talk about it, really, because of his, you know, aspirations and what he wanted to accomplish, you know, judge of probate, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so he ran into an attorney, Robert Bleckman, who actually at the time, and we didn't really know it, was when he met him, that he was a public director or a public relations director, or just became the public relations director for MUFON, and worked with John L. Hynek before that. And so they had a couple of drinks and talked a little bit, and my father let it out, and lo and behold, his law firm was only a mile and a half from my condo. So after work, I would get home and run over to his office. And, you know, my father's like, you should talk to Robert. Nice guy. You know, he's taking an interest. He's a professional guy. He's not going to treat you like a fool.
Yeah.
You know how it is, you know.
Yeah.
And he was very astute and professional and just a nice guy. And I walked into his office and he sat me down. He already knew I was coming in. My father set it up. And I looked over my shoulder and there was a huge picture that he had gotten from an officer took a picture of this craft underneath the Hudson River. Remember those Hudson River Valley cases? There was a
Yeah.
And we talked about that for a little bit, and then we got right into our case and what happened in detail, and we had a binder. You know, our whole family's kept in notes, you know, because we wanted to talk about it with each other, and my brother and I would sketch what we saw and that sort of thing. And you know, my sketches from hanging at school now hang in Roswell. So, they, you know, we've had a lot of this stuff for a long time. And so he decided to look into it, and he put a lot of time into it. He contacted, John, Hynek, and they found out that there were three cases right around our home where there were 40 to 60 witnesses, and one of them was at Jug Inn Resort, and because it was a private club, they were, you know, surgeons, doctors, you know, they were... They were upstanding type of people in the neighborhood or area. And so there was given I think it was a CE3, and another case was a CE1, and they were both crafts that were seen and landing over a property. So that really had a lot of interest to him, and so he came back and talked to my brother and I and my father in depth. And then in 1992, he was responsible for organizing the symposium at the United Nations, and Bud Hopkins was there, Stanton Friedman was there, and they discussed a lot of cases in detail in support of 33-4-26, which was a bill to have a unified agency, if you will, to, you know, be able to extract information or share information, which in some respects probably is Bigelow Aerospace these days. And, you know, that's really what it is, I think.
You'd be right.
Yeah. And what's bizarre, though, is they actually investigated our case in 2009, but I'm jumping ahead. So anyway, SETI was... they were launching this new Microsoft technology, you know, Star Wars, the whole bit. So Robert's like, look, now's the time. So he organizes this thing and uses 33426 as his foot to get in the door. And he mentions our case in support of Cash Landerman and a few others that were big names. And that was really the end of it, we thought, for a little bit. And then suddenly, my father's got all these documents, you know, stuff from the, I'm sitting right in front of it, the Pentagon, the Ministry of Defense, you know, Greece Ministry of Defense, the U.S. Department of State, you know, all these documents that were coming back that were given to my father via someone else. And so when he got ready to retire, he decided to, you know, write a book, or at least mention about writing a book. And he was killed on the same day, October 2nd, but 14 years late. And Robert Bleckman passed shortly after. And then the doctor that went public wrote a letter on September 15th, and he lost his life on November 12th. He was asphyxiated. And so that was a lot of... It was a lot of, you know, talk, you know, about why this would happen. And so the CDC came in from Atlanta because my father was in office, the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut. And the CDC came in, and then they found a deadly virus in his air conditioning unit. The building that he was working in has been closed down to this day. It's still
closed. Oh, my God.
And what else that we don't, you know, kind of try to, I try to get to the facts of it. My brother rather tell the story, but what I'm trying to do is really let people know. We've got 2 hours, so let's do it.
Yeah.
In 2009, my brother was driving through Indianapolis, which you probably saw on that show.
Oh, yeah.
He did a good job of it.
Was that the Alien Mysteries show?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I was sitting there watching that, and I saw the last name Reed. And I'm watching that, and it gets, you know, almost all the way done, and I'm like, holy crap, that's Thomas's brother. You know what I mean? I got to get a hold of him and get on the show, and that's when I started emailing you.
I was in it at the end. I really wasn't feeling good. But man, when I saw myself, I'm like, I could use a face moisturizer, let me tell you. I did not look that. I was like, wow, I really was under the weather. But anyway, in 2009, my brother was going home. He saw this orange ball off to the left of his car and followed it. And, you know, his car, you know, it sound, you know, it did. He kind of felt like it just kind of cut out. And he talks about how he, like, just felt kind of just fell into some state, and he lost some time, and he was bleeding. A lot of blood coming out of his nose. It was on a steering wheel. His watch had to be sent back to be recalibrated. You know, he remembers a lot of what took place. And how this really took a full circle here is that there was another case just down the roads. And this happened March 30th, 2009. And, of course, you know, and here we go again, this Bigelow Aerospace or Robert Bigelow had funded a group through the STAR team type of thing that we were one of the first cases they actually investigated. So here we are, right, back in 1992, in support of 33426, which became Robert Bigelow, who investigated our case in 2009. And so Debbie Cobble was there. You might know her. She actually started – she came in from the MUFON people there and had a camcorder and recorded the magnetic fields that were seen and of course, the radioactive back of the car and the side of it were hot spots, were investigated by Officer White. But in the TV show there, they made him just an investigator for MUFON, and he wasn't. He was an active police detective working, helping, you know, through that whole thing that they put together. But so they found radiation and magnetic fields, and my brother has some pretty good memory of what happened. And so when he mentioned, you know, I can't believe this happened again, you know, and then they said, what do you mean? And he starts talking about what happened in, you know, and brought in the Blackman and the UN thing, and suddenly there's an awful lot of attention on our case. So that's really it, aside from what we actually remember and what took place. And so I'm all yours.
Well, my son, he's been having experiences, but I got a car in 2011 in July, and at Christmas, I got in it, I was going to go wherever, and it started spluttering. And then all the dash went crazy. And it just said engine malfunction on the screen. There's like a screen in the dash above the heater. And it's like, you know, for all your radio, Bluetooth, blah, blah, blah. It said engine malfunction. So I called out the recovery service. He had a drive around in it. He said, I don't know what the hell's up with it. He took it back to the garage where I got it from as a brand new car. And they had it for 3 weeks. In January, I got the car back. I gave them back the hire car. And they told me, I said, well, what was up with it? And he went, just the brain on it had fried, like, you know. So I was like, well, obviously that's a sensor of some kind. And it was actually the computer network. The whole thing had just completely short-circuited for some reason. Now, you know, I break everything. I go near it. I walk into a room and the TV will turn itself on or off. You know, like I have this static about me. And I kind of made jokes about it being my static, because I've got into people's cars before and they've got memory sticks of music in and it's completely wiped it, or the stereo's reset itself and they haven't got the code for it, so it's absolutely knackered, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, I was just making jokes about it being static. But it, you know, something had happened as well around about that time in the March. We had a proper, you know, full family abduction. I haven't really talked about it much because a bit nervous about talking about my children, to be honest, but I'm getting a bit more like, I think, like I need to. And my little boy, who was about 3 years, 8 months at the time, told me that I'd fallen asleep. He was talking about aliens all the time. He said they'd been in his room and he'd been on their spaceship and they'd snipped his hair, snipped his nose, snipped his toes, hit him on the head and put a mask on his face. He said the alien had an orange T-shirt on with all the letters on, and he said he had music phones in his ears. Now, while all this experience was going on, I had music going on in my head, and I'm thinking, I know this tune. I've got to remember it. I've got to remember what it is. But I think whatever it was listening to, I could hear. But anyway, around about that time, he said to me that we were in the car. I was actually in the car with him, and he was in his little, you know, in his seat in the back. Uh-huh. And he said to me that we'd been driving and I fell asleep. He says, and then car went bump. And then he kind of did this impression of me waking up. He says, and then you were driving again. So when I watched the video of you and I thought, oh, I can't remember when all of that happened because I don't keep a diary because it would totally freak me out if I read it. So I thought, well, it's got to have been around about that time because that's when I got the car and that's when, you know, all things were going off quite heavily. You know, we had quite about a year of a lot of stuff going on and a lot of paranormal things going on. So I know it was around about that time, but I don't know, you know, whether it was before this, you know, event had gone on with him or after. But basically, he told me that I'd been driving the car, fallen asleep. The car went bump, and I woke up and carried on driving. And my car had fried, you know. So it was like, well, seems, you know, like it could be completely, you know, linked. Because if it happened to you, I'm not, you know, they had to completely replace a major part of the car, you know, to get it working.
Yeah, that's... Our 1969 account was in some ways similar to that. That was probably the most it is the hardest event for me to talk about. But you know, we were in a car and leaving a horse show, and the show did a pretty good job on it. But we were coming down. It was not maybe like 10 o'clock on a back road, a two-lane road, and there was what my grandmother saw in above these trees. The trees on the left were up on a hill, and the right side opened to a field. And she saw these lights going through the field, and she saw this thing kind of like raise up, and then she said it looked like a flying strip mall is how she worded it. Mm-hmm. And I was giving my brother a fireball, and he was looking out the window, too. We were all looking at this thing. And the car kind of like... And I remember my mother, it was kind of weird. It wasn't like, I don't remember her panicking because the car was stalling off of the road, but it just kind of drifted off to the right in dead silence. I mean, there wasn't any, it was almost like if you've been in a hurricane, like a a barometric.
The eye of the storm.
Yeah, like in the middle of, it's like a lighter feeling. It's like, it's dead calm. It's a silent. There's no sounds at all. It's almost creepy. You can, your body picks up on something very different. And you just feel like, God, there's something, what is, you know, something's really wrong here. And you just hear the stones hitting the bottom of the car, and it came to a stop. And then all of a sudden, bang, there was these cadids and crickets, and they just erupted, and had all this noise at once, and bang, then you're not in a car anymore. Mm. And all of us remember that same day, like, we that's the one we talked about the most. And and after, you know, we found ourselves back in the car, or at least three of us were back in the car. My grandmother was actually in the middle of the road. I don't know what she was doing out there. My brother was kind of like curled up in the back seat, kind of like asleep, like a baby, you know, curled up like a baby. And my mother was actually in the passenger seat, and she was driving, so she shouldn't have been in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
I was behind the driver, and I saw my grandmother out the windshield, and so nobody else was responding to me. And at the time, I was like, you know, once things happen, you're not thinking, you know, rationally. It's a weird thing. So I got out and I started, you know, running to my grandmother, you know, like, Nana, Nana, I'm a little kid, you know, and Nana. And she was like, going like from the car into the oncoming lane, you know, she was like walking that way, like a sideways in the road. And I go up to her and she kind of turned and she went into a store. There was a store that was actually open. And she walked up these steps and went into the store, and I walked in, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds behind her. And I walked by there was a clerk there on the right, and it was like an old, they had baby carriages and strollers, and I've talked about this before, and she kind of just kept walking until she got, like, tied up in these bikes and carriages and strollers, and I kept saying, Nana, you know, Nana, you know, and so I tried to grab her hand and the whole thing, and she started breaking down and crying. She got caught up in these strollers and carriages and started pushing one like there was a baby in it, and she broke down, and it was freaking wild, man. It was like
harrowing. Yeah. Awful, I should imagine. You know, when you're a child, I mean, you look to the grown-ups to, you know, for the to take control, don't you? And I know what you mean about that kind of surreality of it. As in 1997, I went to Wales with some friends, and we had a UFO come from way over in the distance. We'd been watching it, and it was moving away from us, but then it stopped and just came over to us. It was right above us, and we were just watching it like it was fireworks. So there was no, you know, reality check. We didn't realise what was going on, what was happening. It didn't impact us. When the kids got scared and we took them back in, and I just took it upon myself to go back out and stand right underneath it, even though another one had come out of it and landed on the floor behind us. So there were two, you know, it was like, I just was looking at everybody who had just gone back into the house, and Steve started washing up, Daniel and John went to watch TV, and the kids started playing, and I'm just looking at everybody, and I said, chuff this, you know, what's outside? Like, I remember even now sort of shaking my head and laughing as I walked out and walked the full length of the garden away from the house by myself without anyone saying, no, don't go out there by yourself, or are you mad, or anything. We had the door open. You know, it was like nothing was going on until I stood underneath it, and I'm there looking up at it thinking, well, now what? And something ran up behind me, something fast on 2 feet, bumped into my back, and the next thing I know, I'm gone. Superluminal woman trying to get back in that house in 2 bionic woman leaps, absolutely blind. I could not see a thing. I'd gone, my brain just shut down, you know. God, I was a mess from that point on. It was like, just even my son had said that a hand had come out from under the hedge and touched his foot. You know, we didn't look. You know what I mean? He's like, you would look. Your rational mind would make you look. But it's so stunning that you don't behave like you should. And I wonder if our behaviour was manipulated in some way so that we didn't react to a situation and completely freaked out.
I've said that from the very beginning. That was actually one of the things that Robert Blechman was most interested in, actually, our feeling on that. And you know, my brother, my mother, and I are very, very adamant that what we feel is like an electromagnetic pulse, or like an ELF, a tuned ELF. And I was looking into the work that Yale University has done, and of course the wonderful work that HARP has been doing, and how you can actually, you know, crowd control with ELF, and you can create a magnetic, put out a magnetic low ELF, and you can change.
I've done a lot of research into that myself as well. Yeah.
So would this thing happen, when this happened with my brother in 2009, you know, we were like, bang, there it is. I mean, we knew it, we felt it, that's what it was. And I think that's how they control the environment, but that's an assumption, but we're pretty solid on that one.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah, the military uses that against pirates around Somalia. They have these sound weapons that they actually put on these, they're like non-lethal guns.
Mm. Wave guide horns.
Yeah, man, and I just, you know, play Slayer real loud. And
Well, I said that back in the 80s, and it actually went to the UN in 1992, so I had it first. And I mean, we knew it then. We knew it then. I mean, you can tell, you can feel it. But anyway, I don't want to beat that around. But
they would have to have something like that because – we're such an emotional species, you know?
That's what I say. We would just so freak out. I mean, what is the point of having a schizo human? I mean, we can, our mood can change in 1 second flat, you know? That is,
absolutely.
We are that unpredictable. I think that we do need to be subdued as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, I think it otherwise, also the environment, too, around them. You know, the whole area is controlled, and it becomes a very tranquil and safe environment to do what they want to do. And at the same time, you're engaged in this, and you're not really fighting it. And everything just works out perfect for them. And then if, like my mother or grandmother who wouldn't respond, maybe they weren't meant to respond at that moment. You know, maybe it's very directional.
Well, I've found that, like the experience I talked about with my son. Now, I'd had an experience and I'd woken up because I had this mad buzzing in my head. It was overwhelming. It was like a real vibration. And I woke up and looked, and in my bedroom doorway, I thought, there's a Power Ranger. And I thought, no, it's a biker. And I thought, oh my God, it's not any of them, you know? And it was, you know, I had one of the tall greys stood in my bedroom doorway, but it had a helmet thing on, a really long pointed helmet, and a silver, dull grey, but with silver flex suit.
Hello?
Hello, I'm here.
I've muted myself. It was standing sideways onto me, looking down the stairs, and I started saying, no, go away, leave me alone, go away, things like that. And it looked at me, and I just kind of got this information in my head about why he was wearing his helmet and suit, etc. So that was my experience. But then when my son came and told me about, you know, the aliens aren't my friends, are they, mummy? And I went, you what? This is because they hurt me and they told me what they'd done. It wasn't until ages afterwards that I pieced it together that was actually the same night, because I'd looked out the window and seen all these men stood outside in this black car playing music. He said to me, the spaceship was there, and he pointed exactly where I'd seen the car, and he said, and there were all aliens up in the road, and some of them were standing in your car. Well, all these men were standing around the car. So I'd seen men, he'd seen aliens, I'd seen the car, he'd seen the spaceship. But I tell you what, it was months before I pieced it together, because it's like it fragments so much in your mind and fragments your mind so much. It's like you're hardly able to get a full picture instantly. It takes time to come back to you. So I think that dazed and confused thing, which was I was slapping myself around the face so that I didn't fall back into this state because my head was still buzzing. And I actually made myself go back up to the window and look out, and there was nothing there. And the music stopped as soon as I sat up. So I knew it was in my head. You know, so it's just like, it's nuts the way that... the way they mix your mind up so that you don't get it straight away, you don't know straight away. And, you know, it took me such a long time to figure that out as one experience and the whole family involved rather than it just being one of, you know, mine.
Yeah, there was a lot of people involved in ours too, not just, matter of fact, there's a lot of other people now talking out about it. You know, they're actually doing radio shows and everything else about our case back in the 60s. I mean, there were so many people that saw this thing and knew about it, and And I think that's one of the reasons that we, you know, it remained so fresh in our minds. And, you know, there was a lot of conversation about it. I mean, there's actually somebody right now. Do you remember the movie? His name is Mario. He's actually, was actually one of the actors in the movie, just so you know, Iron Man 2.
And, oh, I love that film.
yeah, and he actually grew up in my town and right. had an experience. He speaks with Yvonne Smith a lot, and I'd never met him before. I didn't know him, but we're the same age, and he remembers pretty much, you know, obviously it happened on our property, and we had front row seats, but
yeah,
he does remember it, and WSBS, I believe, is the radio station that actually ran it, so a lot of people knew about it, and I think that's one of the again, it's one of the things that kind of had this resurface, and you know, the other thing too that was interesting about this was that my entire fourth grade class, all these kids were drawing sketches of what they saw, and I walked into my first day of fourth grade, and I stood in the doorway, and I remember this like it was last week, and the teacher had see me stop. I couldn't walk into the classroom. And I looked on underneath the chalkboard on the left side of the classroom. It's now a library. I'm back there about, 3 months ago. I saw all these sketches underneath the chalkboard on the left side of the wall, right near the door that you walk into the class. And one of them said, "Green men from Mars," you know, "Green men from Mars." And I looked at the teacher. I said, "They're not green and they're not from Mars." And of course, this was a new class for her, so she was like, "Okay, this is good. You know, this is kind of the class, right?" And so I told her who I was, and made for a long day. But at the same time, you know, everybody in the area knew the family, you know, knew our property, where I'm going with this is I actually reached out to the. To Tammy Blackwell, who's actually ahead of the city hall down there now, and she's gotten me in touch with some of the old school teachers and everything. So, you know, it's nice to validate, even go back that many years and speak to someone who remembers it as well and who might not. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do because obviously 1997 was when we had the UFO event in Wales, but after that we came back, me and Steve split up, and Steve and Daniel moved to Spain, and their uncle, John, who was with us, he stayed in Leeds. And I couldn't find him. I really wanted to find him because I wanted them to tell me that I'd completely misremembered everything. I needn't have messed my head up as much as I had, you know, and it didn't happen like that. But eventually I found him through Facebook, and I spoke to Steve for 3 hours on the phone. He told me, you know, exactly what I've always said had happened. It was almost word for word. And I said to him, "How did it make you feel? You know, how did it leave you feeling?" He said, "Raw, naked, stripped to the bone, totally exposed." Then Daniel got in touch with me. Now, I'd had a complete meltdown and went to a crisis centre, and I just downloaded everything to this poor woman. I was telling her all about the weird synchronicities and this and this and this and this. And then I went downstairs and she made me a cup of tea, and then I looked at my phone because I felt like a big idiot, you know. So I thought I'll just involve myself in the internet. And I got a message from Dania saying everything to me that I just said to this woman. So I showed this woman this message. So she knew I wasn't crazy. And I went, "Look," she was like, "Oh my God," you know, completely stunned. And so I spoke to Dania. Dania came over from Spain. And, you know, I asked her and she was like, "I'm a mess from it. I've never, you know, never been right since." And then I was thinking, hang on a minute. There was only me that went outside. I was the only one that went out by myself. Why is everybody else so messed up? I was the only one that got a fright. Everybody else acted like it was fireworks and nothing, you know. So I was like, "Oh, my God, something's gone on after this," you know. So I do know that isolation, 13 years, I carried it on my own. And still now, I don't ask them to speak out. I've never asked them to do anything because I don't want them to expose themselves to the vipers that are waiting. but I wrote a status about, you know, seeing your video and how it had affected me and what I'm doing with my support network, everything. And ironically, I've not seen either of them on Facebook for ages, but they both came along and liked that, you know, so... I thought, well, you could back me up, guys. Come on. Write a letter or something. But it is a terrible, lonely place as well, isn't it? the isolation of it and never knowing whether it really happened or not was, you know, which I did obviously know that it really happened, but at the same time I was like, did it? Was it like that?
You question yourself because it's so different, and you're like, oh my God, you know, what's going on, you know? It's,
There were things about it that didn't make sense, like why the clouds were so low. I thought, I've distorted loads of things in my memory because realistically the clouds couldn't be that low. But I went back last year to make a little video, and we were on the top of a mountain. We were driving through the clouds to get to the house, you know, because it was a pretty wet day. And I was like, well, that explains why the clouds are so low then. We were on a mountain, you know. I couldn't even remember where we were. My brain was so shot to pieces afterwards, you know.
I understand.
You do know, don't you?
I've been there. Well, yeah. Definitely been there. You know, we were hoping, or at least my mother was hoping, for this wonderful Norman Rockwell upbringing, and man, was it anything but that. You know what I mean? It was just, son of a gun, man. It was pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it went until years later that I started obviously remembering the childhood stuff, like when I used to go out of the house in the middle of the night, and I used to wait for everyone to go to sleep and then go out and walk over to a field opposite. And so that, you know, there were always these like lights. I thought they were football field lights, you know, the halogen lights that they have set up for playing at night. But they've never had any on there, so I don't know what these lights were that I was heading to, but they were like at least three oblong lights, because I thought they were the floodlights for the field all my life, you know. The only time I ever remember coming back is when I took my sister once. I asked if she wanted to come, and when we're walking back, I can remember this. I can remember looking at her and feeling sorry for her, but I don't know why I felt sorry for her. You know, and now I just think, well, obviously I was going out and, you know, seeing them and what have you, because I've got some childhood memories of strange things that have never made any sense until I got to grips with what was going on, you know.
Yeah, this happens young, you know, and it becomes your whole life's canvas for everything else, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, my brother was 4, and, you know, I was, you know, 5, 6, my son, you probably know this, I mean, he had started having some really weird kind of abilities and things that we noticed, and whether or not, you know, you can attest and say it had anything to do with us or not, there's just things that you got to ask the questions, you know, and then my brother's son, you know, when this happened with my brother, and even in the show, they did a pretty good job with that when he was chasing that fire.
Orange. Yeah.
It's like the size, I don't know, it looked like a basketball to him where he was, but we figured it was about the size of a Volkswagen Bug or something. And you know, his son was turning 5. So,
yeah.
There seems to really be some truth.
Oh, definite correlation with ages. I found that. Yeah. I think it's to do with development stages in the child, of hormonal changes at certain points.
Roswell, I talked about this a little bit. And again, you know, I'm not one to want to sound like a know-it-all, like I have the answers, but I do know how I feel, you know? And I look at it this way. I mean, this really happened. This happened with my mother. It happened with my grandmother. I mean, we only had a handful of cases. And that's the other thing. Everyone goes, oh, you know, years of this, years. We didn't have years of anything. We had a handful of cases that involved our family. And it involved my grandmother, my mother, and involved, you know, myself and my brother and our kids. So I look at it this way. I mean, if you were to, and I believe it has to do with genes and genetics and maybe even the blood types and the antigens. I mean, there's got to be something to it. I think they're looking for a common platform to build on. And if you find a racehorse, you follow that racehorse, right? And you find a dog or, you know, that you like, a pit bull, you want a good attitude, you follow that line of pit bull, right? So, but at the same time, if you have something that is of interest or hypothetically, I was going to say, you know, something simple like varicose veins or something, right? You go to the doctor, you have them fixed, right? But your children might still have varicose veins, right? So,
yeah.
Maybe if there's some tweaking, if there's something not just extracted, but something that's being, something that's universal, something that's also being given back in some way, maybe there's a way to see, well, what we're doing, is it following through? You know, is it carrying through your offspring? Maybe that's what this is about. Maybe there's a little bit of tweaking here and there, not just something that's being taken or removed, but shared. And there's an interest to see if that 5-year-old is going to carry that through or not. and that would make sense to me, and I don't see really anything else that I could feel really.
Well, that would make more sense to make sense to me. I mean, I have got a theory on all of that, but we can't really go into it now because I think we're coming up for a break. But with my son, they seem to have more of an interest in him, and he is completely telepathic, psychic. He just says things that do your head in. It's like, oh my God, I was absolutely thinking that just then, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the kind of genetic, not an improvement, but a repairing any sort of damaged bits through frequencies and light, lasers and, you know, modulated frequency laser rays. Because of an experience that I had where I had a green laser light on the crook of my arm where they would put a needle or something, you know. And another woman, I know she, this is what prompted me to look into it actually, was she'd seen a green laser lights in her experience. So I went looking into that, and there is a way to repair any genetic malfunctions using light and frequency. So yeah, I think that's all going on, and like he's my fourth child, so maybe the tweaking has, you know, has been beneficial to him in that way. Yeah. Poor kid, I wouldn't want to be able to read everybody's mind.
Do they play chess well?
My eldest son likes to play chess, yeah. He was in the chess club at school, yeah. The little one's only five, so he's not there yet.
Yeah.
But he's wick on a computer. Oh, my God, he can use my phone better than I can. And he's taught me a trick or two on YouTube. Do you know what
I can imagine.
Definitely just seem to take to everything these days, the children. It's amazing. I'm not all of them, though. I mean, like, all the ones that I sort of think have got something going on, they all seem to be, like, the grungy ones or the, like, gothy types or emo or whatever, you know. And they're all so concerned with the planet and each other, whereas the other kids are all concerned about having it off and drinking and, you know, smoking weed on street corners and robbing people. It's like two distinct species. It's like a species split. Well, that's what I think anyway.
I gotcha. Yeah. Are we going for a break or do you want to...
I don't know, where's Joe gone? He's the boss normally.
Okay.
He starts making funny noises. I start getting like boings and things coming over, and I heard a weird noise a little bit ago, so I thought it was break time.
Well, just that if you have a minute.
Yeah. He wants to, he just sent a thing on Skype. He's He's like, let's go to break.
Okay, let's go to break then.
World Order.
Victor, I was but the fallen angel, but then I discovered Viagra and I was resurrected.
Last night I tried to tease her, I came with a bit of pinch. She said, now stop that jiving. No, whip out your big 10-inch. Rest it up, man, I'm playing the blues. Bum, man, I'm playing the blues. She just loved my big 10-inch. Viagra, I'm playing the blues.
Whoa, did you hear?
Listen to the Church of Mavis radio show, hosted by Jeffrey Pritchett, 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights.
Follow your beard and journey into the high strange. Be sure to stop by
www.churchofmavisradio.com
for upcoming shows, paranormal news, and show archives. That's
www.churchofmavisradio.com.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates, and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway. MindCemetery.com.
Join us for Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, August 9th through 11th. A weekend of exploration into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, and new evidence of ongoing contact. A weekend of films, panels, lectures, and workshops will feature leading experts, including George Noory, and many more of some of the most important theorists and scientists in the field. Enter to win a free ticket at contactinthedesert.net. See you at Joshua Tree Retreat Center in August for Contact in the Desert, 760-365-8371.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Citizen Sane Radio. Our guest tonight is Thomas Reed. He's telling us about his family's abduction experiences that have been going on since he was a child. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. You still with us, Thomas?
Absolutely, right here.
Oh, great. Right. So, in the break, we discussed what we were going to talk about next, and so let's go for it.
Okay. What I would like to share while I've got you is that... You know, we've done a couple of interviews and a couple of TV show things, and you know, I normally write down on what I would like, you know, or what's important to me. And I think that if we're going to share this, I think, don't get me wrong, they did a pretty good job. They just leave out what I think is important. And to me, losing my father on the same day that our case went before the United Nations to me, I don't know about you, but that sends a pretty strong message, and it's been overlooked, and I don't understand that. I think that you know, so many cases and so many people you talk to, Sasha and Guy, you know, it's like, you know, they're everywhere you go. It's like, where's the proof? Even after this Alien Mysteries show, when I was in Toronto, there was an article written, a follow up by some local paper. And it said, well, you know, it put UFOs in with Bigfoot, and, well, I'll never know the truth. I'm thinking to myself, well, one of the reasons Alien Mysteries actually did a good job for me, or us, is that Mike, the director, sat down with me in the lobby of the Hampton Inn, and I showed him all the documents, and he treated it a little bit more fairly than I think he was going to at first. And some of those documents that I showed him, well, they're sitting in front of me, reports right from the Ministry of Defense, and, you know, physical damage to automobiles that were passed down to him or through my father through the UN, and those who went to the UN and those who had connections to the event there, that they, you know, papers on an organization called SIGN. You remember program SIGN that was before Blue Book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's stuff about SIGN and stuff about the FBI and you know, the physical trace evidence and the F-4 fighter jet that was shot down, and the different you know, they were unable to fire on the on this thing, and it talks not just about UFOs, if you will, or vessels of some sort. It actually talks in these documents about the effects that it had on other planes, people, and vehicles. I mean, I have it in black and white. And I can read one from right here. F-4 jet fighter was paralyzed to fire his AIM-9 missiles to an offensive UFO craft, and was unable to use his UHF and intercommunication instruments. Another one from this is from the U.S. Department of the State. Aliens from an outer solar system are a potential threat to us, and we are a potential threat to them. I mean, these are black and this is in black and white. My father has hundreds of these documents, and so what I believe happened is that I think that he had something that maybe he didn't know he had, or something that he was going to share or mention. I mean, he had a voice, right? I mean, he was in politics. He, you know, he was also a college professor, and at night. And so I think that whatever it was that he was going to voice, for lack of a better word, is what had ended his life and caused his demise on the exact same day, 14 years later, that our case was mentioned. And our case wasn't a front runner. You know, it was in support of Cash Landerman and several others, cases in Mexico and everything. Because my father was actually running, you know, still in office, he didn't want to, you know, overstate anything or get his name out there. It was simply the fact that it was a pillar standing. I mean, there is a holiday. There is a holiday in Connecticut, in Bridgeport. It's a proclamation that has our family's October 6th remains a proclamation, a local recognized holiday in Connecticut. There's actually a bench in the city green dedicated to our family. So when my father was speaking out and saying, yes, this happened to our family, everyone wanted to say, be able to reference our family's case. And that's how it got there in the beginning. But because my father had some pull, he was given a lot of documents. I'm sitting right now behind me. I've got five or six bins filled with these documents. I don't even know what I have. I may have what he was going to share, or maybe it was just, you know, what a coincidence, though, huh?
Coincidences. Yeah.
The CDC came in and actually closed down the building down. It's been closed down now
for the deadly virus. Did you ever find out what the virus was?
My brother actually was interviewed on the news, and before he went on the news, he actually spoke to somebody from that office. There was an environmental vehicle there, and they said that all they could tell him was that they were large luminous sticks. Now, the New York Times actually wrote a quick little article that they thought there was Legionnaire's disease. Well, you don't close a vehicle, close a school, it was a school actually, over Legionnaire's disease. Most people would
permanently.
Pontic fever, maybe, you know, you take some antibiotics and you go back to school.
Yeah.
But you don't close it for 7 straight years and have someone die in the same day. And then, of course, Bleckman passed, and then the doctor, Michael Buckner, wrote a report on September 12th and was asphyxiated on November 15th. So, you know, you got to ask yourself, or is it backwards? It was September 15th, November 12th. So you got to ask yourself, you know, and then the other thing too, you know, we took polygraph tests, you know, passed the polygraphs. And so you sit here and you ask yourself, okay, well, we share this with the programs and that sort of thing. And whoever wants to, you know, do a show, Raw TV or whatever. And, thank God they're going to do it actually. And, at least they said they would. And, we filmed with them for my brother went to, I think London, and they filmed part of it in Sedona and part of it in Indianapolis. But I think they're going to be the first ones to actually talk seriously about the facts and the UN connection and my father's death.
Yeah.
It looks like they're going to turn that into a mission. So thank God for that. But because everyone else just wants to talk about the lighthearted stuff, you know.
I know, that's the problem, isn't it? There's a really dark side to everything as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, my mainstream, you know, they avoid the facts while thriving on the colossal garbage, you know. But even, you know, as of late, they even go out of their way to deny crucial details, making whatever value look as if they have nothing to work with so they can quickly discredit it. And I think this is really unfair.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's...
So there's three people died, one school shut forever.
That's just something that, you know, doesn't get voiced much, you know, and so I thought I would just discuss that a little bit with you, and I know it's a little dark, and I don't want to bring down your listeners, but I mean, you know, but it is what it is, and that's...
No, I do a well enough job of that as it is.
I think so, yeah.
How could you do that? Yeah, you just have
We don't normally talk about all the fluffy side of things, do we? We don't have light beings on them. We don't have the love and light
either. You know, I'm pretty much I'm a skeptic, you know, when it comes to what people say. And, you know, you can just tell right off, you know, if they got nothing, you know, and I kind of voice my opinion on that. And,
okay.
You know, I'm not Mr. Love and Light. And
yeah, it's quite, we can be quite pointy, can't we? That's why we like to have guests on that we get along with, so where there's no bloodshed. But you know what I wanted to say was that, you know, the orange light that your brother followed in the car?
Yeah.
I've seen that before. It came across the back of my house, and what it looked like to me was the light from around the street light had just left its place and travelled off. It was like see-through. Yeah. And just an orange kind of like glow that went through the sky. I was like, what the hell is that? It wasn't like a lantern, because it was a massive glow with nothing in the middle. It was just like the light from the street light had just decided to go off to the east. So I've seen that myself. When I saw it, I was like, oh, that thing keeps coming back up. You know, people keep mentioning it. And the black box as well. Can we talk about the black box, please?
Yeah, whatever you want, Sasha.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more. I'd love to have you tell me that again, because I know one of the guests that we've had on before, Paula Green, she's a contactee friend of mine over here in the UK. We actually know each other personally now as well. And she's had two experiences with this black box. And also another woman that I know, I won't mention her name, she's had the same as well, with all symbols on it, and she's trying to open it. You know, not necessarily for me to hear it again, but for other people that I know that have seen that, I think it's important. It's an important piece of whatever's going on. It's come up before.
Well, I would say that, you know, first I didn't see it. My brother did, but I can tell you what he's relayed to me, and I believe him. I believe every word he tells me. I mean, no reason not to. And that 2009, by the way, really affected him in a lot of ways. I mean, he's never really quite been the same. I think it was just too much for him, but kind of introverted now and quiet. But he remembers that there was a figure in front of him. And there's the other thing, too. You know, sometimes, and I don't know if you hear this a lot or not, but it's almost as if there is a light luminous, almost but something about them that just, there's a, like an ambient light of some sort. And there was a box that was in a hand, and it was being laid out slowly in front of him. And it was when he went to, I guess he really didn't know to take it or not, but when he did, he kind of went kind of quick. And they actually pulled it back as if they thought he was going to touch them. And apparently he feels that wasn't to happen. He wasn't to touch then.
Mm-hmm.
And then he held it for a moment, and it was about this little round the size of a Rubik's cube, I guess, and it was black and rounded type of edges, and it had like a marks in it, like a C with a line through it, something that looked similar to an F.
Yeah.
A weird looking F insignia. And something that looked like railroad tracks, maybe a line through it. And there were these couple weird little... The one I remember the most is almost like a spoon, but a big dip in it, like an ice cream scooper, you know?
I missed all that. It went quiet. It cut out. Sorry. About a minute. You said it had got rounded edges and...
Rounded edges and then some weird signs in it, like that of a C. With a line in it, and one that looks similar to like an F. and like an ice cream scooper with a long handle, and just some weird little insignias on it. And doesn't really remember it that well, but remember something that looks like a railroad track. You know, you have reference points. You go, oh, that's going to, you know, like just like the willow tree that I remember seeing when I was young. I don't understand what the significance of that was either. But the boxy, when he went to take it, they actually pulled it back. I guess he felt it was because they thought he was going to touch them. And I don't know if anyone else has shared that with you, but that's how he felt. And this was in, like, again, this was in 2009. So he was, you know, he was in his 40s. And so maybe, I don't know, because he was big, I don't know. He's a big guy. My brother is almost 6 feet, about 270 pounds, and he's a big boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. I don't really, I didn't see it, but he certainly described it to me well enough. And,
well, it is interesting because I have heard a description twice identical.
To what I just said?
Yeah, in the past year, I'm talking about that people come to me talking. I say the past year, 12-month period. Yeah, twice, two women.
No kidding.
And they will talk to you, you know.
What about this willow tree thing? I remember seeing that when I was 6 years old. The first thing I remember seeing on this like screen was almost like a I was inside this room and went from about 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and there was like almost like a plasma screen. We don't, you know, we're talking 66, so we had a little black and white television with like three stations, and this thing just went from, it was massive and vivid color, like an LCD display or a plasma. And the whole screen up front was like a galaxy of some sort. And the only shape that I remember seeing was what formed the shape of a boot or sneaker. I used to wear Converse All-Star, so I referenced it to a sneaker, high top, and then coming down and going to the left. And that was up for, I'm guessing, maybe 30 seconds to a minute. I could have been longer. And then, bang, this huge willow tree image. It almost looked like you could walk out the front and just be there. I mean, it was vivid. The tree was moving. There was wind coming through it. It was, like, blowing up. There's gold light coming through these green branches. And I'm sitting there staring at this thing like, oh, my God. You know, it was beautiful, really. But before that, I was concerned about my brother. I kept turning around, looking to see him. I was, like, getting antsy of some sort. And he had a club foot. He had a brace on his leg. We don't talk about that either. And he remembers a lot of attention to this brace on his leg. And so I was worried, you know, I think there was a comfort, you know, being with a brother, you know, or anyone, you know, you have that person, there's a comfort with that person. Then when you're separated, I thought, well, maybe later on I was thinking, well, maybe this was to calm me. Maybe this was to take my mind off him. I'm thinking, well, there's certainly better ways to do that. So why show me a willow tree on a river, on a lake or whatever? And there I was staring at this thing. And I don't remember much more of that day, believe it or not. It just kind of ended with that. There was a time when my mother found us in the front of the yard. Blast came through the wall and like the light. And I was like, I felt like I did like I was laying down. Then I remember feel like I was standing up. And then it was like I was upside down. And I was going to tumble off to the right, like I rolled to the right. And it was like a whitewash, like being sucked up in the middle of an ocean wave, like an undertow, like you're flipped around and you don't know which way is up. And all of a sudden, bang, you know, my brother, you know, references that I'm not there. And you know, my mother turned on the floodlights. They didn't do very well. My mother actually was on horseback, she put the floodlights on around the stable, and even had a phone outside on a pole. So everything was outside. We had a lot of property. So she had these, you know, lamps everywhere, and she flipped them all on. We weren't anywhere to be found. My mother saddled up a horse and she went to the top of the property. It's like an Appalachian Trail used to ride, you know, up there. We weren't allowed to go up there because, you know, if we fall off our horse, we were too young and she'd never know where we were, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had to stay within sight of the house. And we remember, you know, my brother and I remember going by this rock that was huge, like a boulder. It was like maybe 9-10 feet high within about 20 feet wide, and we remember going past that and seeing this wishbone like tree, and then this craft was there just behind this wishbone. And we remember like going to the left of the wishbone. It looked like a turtle shell. That's how we remember, you know, we referenced it. What else are you going to say? I mean, it looked like a turtle shell. And we you know, went past it. And so we remember that day very well. We remember being found by our mother. I was in a little bit of a hill. He was lower than me. He was in a graveled in area that was part of like a driveway. And I was on a path, basically, looking down at him maybe 25 feet away. We were like staring at each other. And my mother came running out, grabbed my brother and me, and brought us in the house. And she set us at this kitchen table. And my brother was playing with like a Coke top, bottle top, and just flicking it and playing with it. It seemed to be acting kind of weird. But it was what we were doing. We were like in that kind of a weird state where we weren't doing anything. Playing with his bottle top. My mother gave us an aspirin, wrapped us in blankets, put us in the living room in front of a fire. I mean, we all remember that day. You know what I'm saying? It's like everyone remembers it. And it was just a strange event and thing to stomach and make sense of, you know? And so when I drew this sketch that everyone else had in the back wall that we were laughing about earlier, I drew, you know, they got green men from Mars and they got these crafts and these weird figures and people. I drew a willow tree because I saw it too, right? What I saw was on the inside. It was a willow tree from the inside of it. And anyway, that's the one that hangs in Roswell today. That hangs in their library. And if there was ever a place for it, that's where it belongs. So I saw it for the first time last week, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, I was like, cool, yeah.
Well, there's two little similar stories I've got. One is when I was little, I was about four, and I was at my mum and dad's friends because they were babysitting for us, and they put us in the back room and there wasn't any curtains. It was the top floor of kind of like this set of like apartment buildings, so there were maybe kind of four floors high, but there were walkways all the way around with these lights on. And I was looking at this light, and I kind of thought I was looking at one of the walkway lights, but I was at the wrong angle really, and I thought to myself, I'm going to make that light get bigger, and I just stared at it, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and brighter until it filled the whole window. I don't remember anything after that, but I do remember thinking that I had superpowers, right, because from that moment on, I thought I was special and I had these secret powers, and that's when I started running, trying to flap my arms and fly, because I thought, I know I can fly. what was the other one? I've forgotten now, but anyway, there's lots of similarities to the things that you say. Oh, when you saw the willow tree, I had a similar thing, but mine was a sunflower on a very blue sky background that I saw on this like screen, and then some other images came up after it, but that was there for a while, and it's the only one that I can really properly remember.
Sunflower. What, and it was on a screen like what I described? Or?
I've talked about this loads. I've talked about everything that I'm telling you. I've talked about loads, and I say it was like having a download. It was like watching the screen and all these things flashing up, and I remember thinking, it's too fast, I can't take it all in. And then it was like another thought came back to me that said, it doesn't matter, it just needs to be in there. You know, so like, I don't know if I'm just a crazy person, but I know that I absolutely can't get the vision of that beautiful bright yellow sunflower against that bright blue sky that we never see anymore. We never see the sky that blue anymore.
Right.
And then it kind of went from that to like the center of the sunflower, and it was showed me like all these, where the seeds would be, that kind of pattern, that what to call it now. Anyway, it's kind of like it was like the sacred geometry of the sunflower it went into. And then it went from the outline of where the seeds would have rested into sort of a black screen with this on it in like orange lines. So it looked like a ball. It was like revolving, and down the left hand side there was all these words that were streaming. And that's when I said, it's too fast, I can't take it in. But then the images just got flashed faster and faster, and I don't really remember what happened, if I fell asleep or passed out or whatever. I don't really know, you know, these things, sometimes you can remember them starting, but you never remember them ending, do you?
Or you remember the end, but you missed the middle.
Yeah, or something like yeah. Or you don't know which is the beginning or the end. Which is
maybe it's all just the middle.
So, yeah, there's a lot of things that I was saying. And, you know, watching that video of you and your brother was just startling. Because I'm seeing it, not reading it. It doesn't have the same impact when you read things as to when you see things playing out in front of you. Exactly as you've seen it yourself, when you kind of hoped that you could relegate that thing to a dream, you know, and you think, well, like with Whitley Strieber in 1992, it's beginning of 1992 because my son was a little baby. I can remember the outfit he was wearing, so I know that he was about 4 months old, and he was asleep on my chest, and I heard someone say, "Sasha, wake up now." And I opened my eyes, and there was one of them blue goblin things stood next to my bed. And I jumped out of that bed, and I had hold of my son, and I was spinning around like a lunatic looking for it because it had gone. And I thought, I looked all over the flat because I knew I heard somebody talking in my ear. And nobody was there. You know, my partner, he wasn't back from work unexpectedly or anything. No. And so I thought that was a dream. Talking about it 2005, and a friend of mine said, "Have you seen Communion?" And I said, "No," because after 1997, I wouldn't watch anything to do with aliens or UFOs.
Yeah.
So I watched it, and there they were, almost identical, weren't quite blue enough, but almost identical to what I'd seen. And I thought, well, that can't be a dream then, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know.
You got to face it too sometimes. I mean, you know, we used to block it out, but then, you know, there's dangers in denial. I mean, you have to, you know, just brushing things off and trying to deny that they even happened or took place. I mean, that's not healthy either. So sometimes you just have to, you know, just sit back and accept it. And
It took me a long time to be able to do anything like that. I just spiraled out of control, drinking, taking drugs, partying, just gone mad. I tried to kill myself, you know. I was like, I couldn't take it. I wasn't even trying to acknowledge it. I was trying to deny it, and I was trying to push it out of my head. And the harder I tried, the worse it seemed to get until I was just on my backside.
Everybody wants to know this, or did you have that? And you know, all you...
I've not even told anyone, and I didn't have anyone to back me up either, which is why I've not told anyone, because I couldn't find Steve and Daniel. They were in Spain. So I just sort of, you know, I took a real nosedive. So now, you know, talking to people was what helped me get better. You know, talking to people like me, exploring new ideas, having some idea of what things are, not really knowing why. But, you know, you can kind of figure some things out about your experiences, or, you know, like talking to you tonight, we've had similar conclusions that we've drawn through going through everything and questioning everything all the time, and then questioning anything that you come up with and question that and question that to the point of insanity and beyond. And back
there's more to truth than just the facts, too, you know, and you just have to kind of make sense of it and try to find others that have a similar experience. Like, and I was really shocked that you had almost a similar experience with your car. I mean,
that was like being slapped in the face, because I thought, why didn't I even think of that? Why did I not put those two together? My son saying that and the car going like, and I wish to God I've even thought of it, because I could have taken readings from the car to see if the electromagnetic field would have been affected. But of course I would never think of anything like that because it wasn't in my head. I don't attribute everything to aliens. I don't attribute everything. I thought it was my static, you know? So I missed an opportunity there, you know? And when my son said that there have been aliens crawling all over my car, I could have had some tests done or something. But, you know, it was so long after that when I thought about it, it was way too late, you know?
I know the magnetic fields were still on my brother's SUV up to 2 weeks later.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I thought to myself, wow, I wish I'd have even thought of this, because I could have maybe even had that correlation as well. But as it was, it just went back to the garage and I didn't see it for 3 weeks. You know, that's a long time to take to repair a car these days. You know, you can make them faster than that.
Do you guys, my car was just in the shop for 3 months. 3 right. months. Yeah, that's for another show now. Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any other bits that you wanted to bring up? Because there's so much gone on, isn't there?
Well, what is there anything more? I mean, do you take calls from listeners or anything, or?
No.
Well, we do if we've preset it up, but we haven't today. We could do that if you come on again for sure. If we've got a chat room though, so if anybody in the chat room has got a question for Thomas, get it typed out.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too, I'm glad we spoke because you know there's so many similarities with different people that I've had spoken with as well, you know, it's one of those things like when you go to a meeting or you go to a group, you go to Roswell, you speak at a conference, you know, and I'm starting to find patterns a little bit and I'm not sure, it's kind of like, you know, you can't build a house when every male has an opinion, right? But if you start having a basis for things, you know, like, sometimes yeah. I'll even ask, I mean, how many people you've interviewed like this, but, you know, our whole family's Rh negative. I mean, my son's AB negative, I'm sorry, A negative. My ex-wife was AB negative, I'm O negative. And then there's been a lot of speculation as to whether or not that played a part, you know.
My mum's O negative and I'm not. But what I have found in my research is that the people who are not, do not have a negative blood type, have a mother who is rhesus negative.
Right.
So there, that's a commonality.
I'll just, if I've got, 150, 60, or 400 or whatever, so every now and then, when I get to that slide in my presentation, I'll just say, okay, how many of you here know your blood types? How many of you here are Rh negative? And even though across the board, basically, you're talking about a 13%, I guess, that is Rh negative, I'm going to guess that, I'm going to say close, if not more than half the room at times is Rh negative. I don't know if they're being honest with me, but they certainly, you know, that's a high ratio. Now,
Joe and November Hansen did some blood type research, and it's on the ICAR website. I will get you a link later on, but they've done a study on this, and they've got some data. So you should take a look at that. So, yeah, sorry I interrupted you.
No, not at all. I think that's something that, I think we're going to find that there's probably as many different antigens or characteristics to Rh negative blood as there are blood types themselves. We're probably going to find that out somewhere along the line. And, you know, that's maybe part of this. But I think, again, what I'd like to make sure that everyone knows here is there's been a lot of speculation on our case and what we saw. And this is something else that I might as well discuss with you. What we saw looked like, it was about 4 to 6 feet tall. It looked like a combination of like a spider with the head of a red ant with some human hands and characteristics. That's what it looked like. It looked
Holy
like
crap.
That's like
something on a new sci-fi channel movie.
Yeah, yeah. I sketched it. I actually sketched it when I was 9, 10. And it looked like it had, you know, hands. I mean, it looked like maybe the hands of a possum or the hands of a mouse or something, you know. They're not like human hands, maybe, but it had hands. And it had an oval-looking head about the size of a little bit bigger than a football. And it had like a goldish red look to it. The body of it was more of a, like, my brother refers it, or references it as looking like a, like elephant skin. It did have some circles on it, like, lines or, rings. I don't know what, you saw this, Tom, or Matthew, you saw this. I don't know what we saw. But it kind of goes into the whole, falls into that whole category of what we believe is genetic engineering or gene manipulation or, you know, extracting what they want from one particular animal to harvest or make something or play with the, you know, the different animals or insects or what have you. And that's kind of what or how I'm able to accept what I saw. I mean, I don't know any other way to remember this thing and look at it and things I sketched and go, you know, what the hell was that? When, you know, maybe it's as simple as, you know, we just played with, put a couple, took a little bit of this animal, a little bit of that, we stuck it
in
hit great in the blender, and that's what we came up with. Maybe
Dr. Moreau's spaceship.
Maybe it's about creating different, species.
I think one of the things they're extracting is hormones. I don't think they synthesize hormones.
Yes,
we can't synthesize hormones. We have these, like, the mock hormones that we're given, you know, and the body doesn't react to them well. And I think that, you know, that's why I think there's certain ages that there's more activity. It's hormones that they're extracting. Probably, you know, I've had stuff going on in my head, you know, I've had puncture wounds on the sides of my head, kind of low down in my hairline behind my ears, you know, and what's in that region of your brain, you know what I mean? And so
my brother had that. My brother had two punctures.
Today?
My brother had two punctures behind his right ear. I think it was a 2-centimeter puncture. According to the doctor, it looked like a sugar cone, like a pink sugar cone wound. You know, you have an ice cream cone, how it's got the flange on it. He had two behind the right ear, and then the other two were right over his chest plate, directly over the T cells, the gland that produces the T cells for the body's immune system. And that was actually in the show, but they showed it as a scar. It wasn't a scar. There were two puncture wounds. So
I've had puncture wounds in my hands, bruises. I've got an album of bruises. They are horrific, some of them. And weird as well, ones that are like just circular dots that go all the way up my arm, from the wrist to the shoulder, you know. I don't know. I don't even have any recollection of those experiences. These are just like bruises. I wake up with bruises. And that's awful because you don't know what's happened to you. I mean, I had all these dot bruises on one arm, and on the other arm, it looked like I'd been beaten up, you know? And then a little while later, I had these dots, bigger ones, on my legs, but in almost the same sort of pattern that was in on my right arm, and it was my left leg. So, you know, on the, like, the buttock area going down into the thigh. Those are the things that do my head in the most, because you know that you've not just interacted with something, but something's done something to you.
Right.
You know, and it's hard, that's hard to accept or take in, you know. But that's really interesting that he said that, because what I thought was that I'd had two spots in the same place, and that the top had been picked off because it was like a hole, like there'd been a big spot there. But there was one, they were identical at either side of my head, you know. And so I think that was something interfering with the pineal gland, because that's about where it is, you know, if you go through the skull somehow, if you can, you know. So then you look at the ages of children when they're taken, especially in puberty. You know, and a lot of people that I talk to are all in my age group, and a lot of them have come from a similar area. We're not too far apart. It's like, are we a batch then, you know?
Yeah. Well, it definitely has to do with children. I mean, my son has, used to have these horrible nosebleeds and have these, like, almost looks like about a 5 or 6 inch membrane, you know, just about, it looks like maybe a straw, like a worm. And it would just, and he ended up having to get an X-ray, and they found that he's got a hole in his cavity, his sinus cavity, and, you know, the whole, you know, and yet you still get these stupid questions. Well, where's the proof? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the fact that my son has a hole in his cavity, maybe the fact.
Well, my daughter and my other daughter had a nosebleed at the same time.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And radiation, magnetic fields, you know, witnesses, radar. You know, here's the thing that I find also disheartening. That if I went to court and I took a polygraph test and passed it, and I had witnesses, and I had several witnesses to it, and you had a police report, and you've got radiation readings, and you've got video of the magnetic fields. I mean, if there was a crime, you could prosecute somebody in a court of law for that.
Yeah.
But because of this subject matter, it means nothing. Absolutely.
It means everything to us.
Yeah, but as far as, you know, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
And, you know, why is it just because of the subject does it have to be so looked at as cheap entertainment, or, you know, something more suited for the sci-fi channel? You know, I don't
well,
guess.
The people that you want to have paying attention, it's like they've got this selective inattention to it.
Well, that's what the media, how the media portrays it all. I mean, it's the people running around in the dark with cameras. You know, it's it's just fluffy stuff. People don't want the hardcore stuff. They can't relate to it. You know.
Well, I do know that when we did that little show that you guys saw, there were some comments that it was a little too heavy for, you know, what they wanted to do and that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, you think, you know, this is 2013 now. I mean, come on, you know, let's grow up, you know. And, it's okay for us to believe that your neighbor was talking to Jesus in the backyard, right? We all accept that. But if, God forbid, we see a...
Well, it's all right to see an alien chewing somebody's face off, isn't it?
You know, it's like...
That's fine.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, you see a craft and everybody sees it. Everyone, they get it on film. You see it on radar, but you're nuts if you mention it. But it's okay. It's just... I'm over it already. I mean, and that's one of the reasons I'm moving forward with this, because I think that, you know, with the little bit of evidence we have, it's not a lot, but it's something... and that's again why I mentioned earlier that, you know, even this program didn't mention actually it did. They mentioned the radiation, they mentioned the magnetic fields. I mean, they were pretty good about that. But there's power in numbers, and I stick to the evidence when I talk, and my brother talks a little bit more about what he saw and what, you know, the events themselves. So we kinda, you know, complement each other that way and hope that in time, you know, this will be taken a little bit more serious, and that we can offer some value and something to the field itself, so that it gets taken a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, and then when that happens, that's probably when I'll insist that Steve and Danya step forward. But it's not a safe environment, is it? You know what I mean? It's like I've seen people that have had more damage done to them by the people that they've spoken to than the experiences themselves. You know, my ethos is that you can come out in hiding. You don't have to go public. If you want to go public, prepare yourself for it. Let me help you prepare yourself for it, because trust me, it's not what you're not going to get the reaction you're going to expect.
Look at my father. Look what happened to him.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. Well, this is it, you see, because since I've been speaking publicly, I've had military abductions as well. I don't know if they are the military, the people in uniform, but I have seen people in uniform, and they've taken me, and they've been in my house. I've heard them walking in my house, up to my bed, dropping a cloth bag of tools next to my head because I was on this futon, and I laid there, and I was aware of it going on, but I just didn't care. It was like... that had been subdued, but that was people walking in, that was, for sure, bumping into my furniture and things like that. So that's another risk. You know, you start talking publicly, don't be surprised if you get picked up by somebody else who wants to know what you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? I mean, I had somebody about, this was June 6th at about 11 a.m., I got a knock on the door. I looked down the stairs, there was somebody, I got glass around my door so I could see someone standing there. I came down. Introduced myself, and this person, the khaki pants, blue jacket, blue tie, blue shirt, matched from top up, terrible dresser. Anyway, he pulls out his wallet, flashes a badge in my face, has me sit down on my front step in my own home. I asked him what this was about. He said, I'll be asking the questions. He was with an agency called Keypoint. And so I asked him to go back in for a moment, because I want to tell my son, you know, that somebody was, you know, this didn't look good. And he asked me why it was, you know, what was the reason that I had to leave immediately. And I said, I have an iron on, is what I told him. So I ran upstairs. I said, hey, you know, talk to my son. I'm like, we've got a problem here. I got some agent downstairs who's trying to talk to me. He asked me, went back out. He asked me if I traveled internationally, if I was savvy with computers, if my mother still lived with this address, how well I knew this family, which I didn't know, I didn't know who he was talking about. Just a lot of personal questions. He talked to me for about 20 minutes and then said that I got his card in my wallet, it fell under the Privacy Act of 1974. And it was just really bizarre. And when I said, I don't see your car, he says, well, you weren't supposed to. And just, it was really... kind of wild. He had a it wasn't like he was asking me questions he didn't already know the answers to, and that was kind of strange in itself. But it was more like validating I was telling the truth or something. There were a couple of things that he asked me, and I was just trying to cooperate because for a minute there I thought, okay, I'm going to go for a ride. But then he left, and that was the end of it. But he did give me his card. And do you know Daryl Sims?
Yeah.
You know, and Daryl Sims actually has his card, and he's trying to find out who he is, and maybe Don Schmidt too. Yeah, Don Schmidt has it. And or has a copy of it, and you know, there's some strange things, and it was just, you know, after I wouldn't tell me what the questions or why he was talking to me, what the importance, you know, and so, you know, again, you know, you never know, but yeah, this is a weird field to be in, or a weird, strange,
it's the strangest life I've ever known.
The only one I know.
Yeah.
there's a guy again. I thought we lost him.
No, I'm here, man.
Yeah. He took a show on all by himself last time because I had.
No, I'm just.
Mini
listen,
crisis,
if I don't have.
Is having the night off.
If I don't have anything, you know, whatever to say, yeah, I'm just. This is something very personal with you two, so you know, I'm just.
Yeah.
Let you guys talk, man. You know.
We did get a question earlier in the chat room from Instant Karma. He said, how do you feel about the Love and Light Brigade and the ones that want to meet aliens?
What, those?
You know, the ones that are like, oh, I can't wait, I would love it, and, you know, all Love and Light and all that. What do you think to that?
I think that I believe that there are different forms here because I've seen more than one, and they're here for different reasons. And however, you know, whether it's mining or, you know, different types of things, even the cattle, you know, the cattle mutilations, who knows what's going on there, but, you know, it's not, I'm not close to that, but there does seem to be a wide range of what's happening. For our family, it was genetic, and I'm sure of that. And whether or not my son or has anything that we can contribute to what happened that would be a benefit to him, I don't know. But he's definitely intuitive. So maybe there's a positive. If there is a positive swing, you know, spin on it, it's going to be the fact that my son is extremely intuitive. You know, would I want anyone to go through that? Do I think if somebody were to say, here I am, you know, I want to go with you, I think that they would have an awfully bad day. However, I don't think that it's really intentional, you know, that there's an intent to really hurt. I really don't think that there's an intent to hurt us. I think that we are just, you know, there's a tissue, there's a sample, there's an extraction, whether it's hormone or whatever. And I think you're right about that, too. We've also believed that there's something to do with hormones. So, yes, I do believe there's something that's going to, they're going to be leaving part of their body there.
yeah.
But I also think that in some respects, I think that there could be a benefit. I mean, I'm seeing some positives with our children.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard to say exactly what's happening, but I think that the person that would be offering their body would definitely, you know, not be the one benefiting. Maybe their child would benefit.
Yeah.
But I certainly wouldn't recommend, you know.
Me either.
I'd rather have just grown up normal like everybody else, you know. I mean, you know, and instead of having these triggering moments, and every time I see a willow tree, you know, feel sick to my stomach for years. I mean, one day, my mother actually switched my bedroom to her bedroom. She gave us the, we locked our, my mother locked our room off, my brother and I's room, after that happened in 69 until she sold the property. And she gave us the master bedroom, and she took another room in the house after we had a grandmother passed away. She was from Hollis Point. She died, and so my mother took her room, and my brother and I had the master, and we were so screwed up from it. I used to sleep with a fork. And my mother came in one day, And this is after she went. Now listen to this one. I told you I saw the willow tree. My mother doesn't ever remember seeing that. My brother and I were the only ones on that craft that we thought or talked about or had any inkling of seeing it. My mother goes out and plants a willow tree at the watering hole near in front of the stable, right? On the left side, just like we saw it. He used to freak out. So she gives me this room, thinking that she's being cool to me and trying to help so we can sleep. And I look out the window, it's a willow tree, right? So we all screwed up on that one. And so my mother came in one night that to give us, you know, she was single at the time. So she'd come in twice, you know, put us to bed, give us a kiss goodnight, you know, then she'd check on us, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she came in the second time and leaned over to give me a kiss. And all I saw was his head next to me. And I lunged up with a fork and I caught her right above the eye. Fork. Oh. And I know, on the bridge of the nose and stuff. And so just to give you an idea, I mean, that's how it was for me. You know, it wasn't pleasant. Now, was I really hurt? Probably not. I don't really remember being physically hurt, but, you know, being, going through something like that and having these emotions and not knowing what's going to happen. I remember running out into a huge hallway, this big circular hallway with all these little hallways coming into it. And just being out there and being brought back in. I only remember 3 or 4 seconds of it, but it wasn't through hypnosis or anything like that. I remember it as clear as day. I can tell, you know, and then the next morning you wake, you know, you take your horse up, then you find the path and you find out where it was and you've never been there before, but you can take your horse, go up your property, go past that rock and that tree and know exactly where that was. You know, that's, you know, that plays on your head. You know, that really bothers you, you know. And then your brother goes, no, it's past the tree. <You know? laughs> And you're like, okay, you know, I'm not eating the rest of the day. I don't feel good. I've had enough, you know.
Yeah. You
know? It's just, that's the way it is. And so anyway, you have to live with it. You got to bury it. But then you don't want to, you have to talk about it eventually or eat you alive. So.
Well, I remember after the abduction that we'd had, and I was, you know, my son was terrified to go to sleep. I'd gone to put him to bed one night, and I found him whimpering, tapping his fingertips together in his bed. So I laid down with him, and the bed shook. So I, like, stood up, took him out of the bedroom, slammed the door, you know, said, F off, get out of my house, blah. Then I had him in bed with me. I stayed up all night. Then I was cleaning the kids' toilet, and they had their own like little bathroom, and I'm thinking, how can I stop this? I've got to stop this. I can't sit at the top of the stairs with a knife all night. I tried that with my eldest son, and he came out of his bedroom, he walked up to me, and he just said to me, you can't stop him, mummy. And I turned and I looked at him, and I didn't say who, I said, why not? And he said, because they're bigger than you. And he turned around and walked off. You know, he was in a different room to me. I wasn't saying these things out loud. You know, how did he even, you know, did they tell him to come and say that to me or whatever? Yeah. So I just had a go saying, well, you better stop effing frightening us then. And what good is he in a messed up bed state like I am, you know, to you? What good is he for any of this if he's, you know, if I can't help him and blah, blah, blah. And, then all of a sudden his memories had changed, and he was saying, oh, they didn't come in my bedroom, mummy, don't be silly. They were in the sky. Anyway, they said bye-bye now. They've gone. Huh. You know, and I'm like, whoa. So there's something going on that they know my thoughts, they know his thoughts, he knows my thoughts. He can talk to me about my thoughts directly when it's happening, you know, and that's the stuff that freaks me out, because I think, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How does that work? I can't find a mechanism. You know, for me, when something happens, I like to find something, a mechanism, a set of mechanics, or a theory that can explain whatever it is. With that, there's nowhere to go with it. How could I even begin to look into that and find out how?
Yeah.
All that, you know, so that kind of freaks me out as well. It's mad, yeah. Isn't it?
My son the other day, and he's done this before, he was at his girlfriend's house, and he packed up at 3 o'clock in the morning and drove back to the house and woke me up and said, are you okay? This is just, 48 hours ago. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And then yesterday this is about, I'd say about 5 hours after he got to the house, there was an accident at the bottom of our street, and a girl had flipped a little SUV and hit a telephone pole basically upside down. And it's a messy little accident here. It's gotten a lot of attention. She was young. She was like 17 or 18 years old driving this car. Anyway, it happened right behind the house, and he knew something was going to happen. Back in 2003, he came out of his bedroom upset, and I had a boat at the time, and he said, I'm scared, I went back in his room, he had blood on his pillow, it was one of those times, you know what I'm talking about, and sleep with me, and it'll be okay, and he crashed and gave him a pillow, crashed the bottom of the bed, and I said, what's going on? He goes, our neighbor's in trouble, the boat's gone, he just felt something was wrong, and he's been like that. And I don't talk about it much, but I'm trying to give you an idea why I was talking about the kids so much earlier. And he said, well, there's a white car with no hubcaps on it, and it was either here or coming or whatever. And so about a week later, it actually took about a week before we saw it. And sure enough, we saw this old beat up white Toyota Corolla, no rims on it. I had sold my boat just a few days later to his football coach, and the lady next to us had been burglarized. And so I thought to myself, wow, that's crazy, I couldn't believe he actually nailed it like that. Even the car. Another time he called my mother up in Connecticut and thought that she was in danger. And the convenience store across the street had been robbed, and they followed the footsteps back to a barn at the back of my parents' property. So it seems like any time that there's danger around a loved one in the home, my youngest can pick up on that.
Yeah.
And that's why I said earlier about, something being not just extracted but mutually exchanged, perhaps. That is, maybe and slowly or little by little, allowing something to manifest that we haven't been able to tap into for a very long time.
I believe that too. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Okay.
Yep. I do. It's like we're being our DNA is being repaired, and you see, our DNA is a language. People say it's junk. It's not. It's got rules like grammar. And the state of our DNA and our intellect and the language that we use is a direct reflection of the state of our DNA. Mm-hmm. If your DNA is in a good state, then you are of good intellect, and you, verbally you have good language. And this is what I'm finding with children now. They call them starseed, indigo, blah, whatever. We're all starseed. We live on a planet. We are in space. You know what I mean? But I think this anomaly with the children becoming more like they are is because over generations our DNA has been repaired. I'm not saying that we're superior in any way whatsoever, because it's only repaired, not, improved. We haven't been given something extra. It's like something else, something old has been switched back on through a process over decades.
I'm sure we've had an awful lot that we have not been able to utilize. I mean, we have these huge brains and this junk DNA, and all this kind of stuff they say, but we are not, I don't think that we are half the person that we were meant to be.
Yeah, I say that a lot. I say that we're more than we've been led to believe that we are. Right. And I think everything starts in the minds, and if we understand who we are and what we are, then we can become that. But, because it's literally all in the mind. It is up to the mind to believe it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. And I try to talk to other people about it, maybe outside the realm of those that you and I might socialize with. And it's just like, they just lack imagination and the gift of science. I mean, this is not that difficult to understand. And I think
that's what we say, but we've been given that thing, I think, where we can think that way. We're not in the box. We don't even see the box. And people are still boxed off. We've only got a couple of minutes left now, Thomas. It's been absolutely amazing to talk to you. Have you got anything that you want to plug, websites, books, anything?
No, I haven't written a book. Basically, I'll give you my website, though. It's tomreed.info. So it's just tomreed.info. And, I have a lot of documents on there. Facebook, I've been posting some things on there as well. And aside from that, I am starting my book. It's going to be called Willow Lake, by the way. But, you know, I really had time to sink my teeth into it. I do have a friend and someone who with a that's going to be trying to take some of my or our evidence, if you will, before a circuit court judge to be ruled on, to be authenticated. And we're, you know, a long ways off, but we're still trying to get that done. And aside from that, I mean, my, you know, Facebook, you know, I try to get back to anyone who's got a question. I'll be more than happy to speak with you that way. You know, so link up with me on Facebook. And my email is actually on my website. I'll give it to you. It's willowlake2012@gmail.com. And if anyone has any questions or wants to reach out, I'd be more than happy to speak with you. Try to get back to everybody. And aside from that, I was kind of looking forward to Scotland, but maybe that's...
Well, you know, if it goes off, it's going to be an absolutely spectacular event. So, you know, it is good on paper. It would be, you know, interesting to see what happens from that. I don't wish anybody any ill will.
It's going to be sponsored by Heineken and all this kind of thing, and I don't know what's going to happen with it, but who knows? You know, Joe.
It was Coca-Cola last year.
Oh, was it? All right. Well, I guess we'll see, won't we? Oh, by the way, have Joe give me a buzz. I guess he had some questions for me. I don't have a way to reach him really, but.
Nobody can get a hold of Joe.
Yeah.
I go to Linda if I want to talk to Joe. So, if you want to talk to Joe, go to Linda.
All right.
Well, thanks ever so much for coming on. Absolutely fascinating. I will come on your Facebook. I will give you loads of documents. I've got some documents that you'll find interesting if you've already got them, but you might not have. And also some links to the ICAR studies that have been done about blood types and personality types, etc. There's lots of information on there. Right, I think we've got to go now. Thanks ever so much. Nice one, Guy.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, nice talking to you, Guy.
Yeah, I know, Tom. I was just... Hey, man.
Yeah. We'll have to do a part two.
Oh, yeah, we will. Yeah, we will.
Take care, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, all right, you betcha.
Thank you.
Nice talking.
Good
night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next week we've got Brett Oldham on again, haven't we?
Yep.
So we'll look forward to that. Thanks for listening, everybody. It's been a good show, I think. Enjoyed it. Don't forget to check us out on the website for any past podcasts. It's citizensaneradio.com. Okay, see you all soon.
Bye.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit powtalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272. Again, 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests, authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays. Oh, wow.
I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and along with my co-host, Victor the Voice Furman, we're Second Sight NYC. Victor, who do we have as a guest this week?
Chris, C.K. Quarterman returns again to challenge your beliefs and debate with you. He's the author of the book, Fallen Angels, Giants, UFO Encounters, and the New World Order.
Victor, I was about to fall an angel, but then I discovered Viagra, and I was resurrected.
Last night I tried Jesus, I came with a bit of pinch. She said, now stop that jiving. No, get out your big 10-inch. Rest it up, man, the play is a fool. Oh, man, the play is a fool. She just loves my big 10-inch.
Whoa, did you hear?
Listen to the Church of Mavis radio show, hosted by Jeffrey Pritchett, 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights. Follow your weird and journey into the high strange. Be sure to stop by
www.churchofmavisradio.com
for upcoming shows, paranormal news, and show archives. That's
www.churchofmavisradio.com.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Join us for Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, August 9th through 11th. A weekend of exploration into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, and new evidence of ongoing contact. A weekend of films, panels, lectures, and workshops will feature leading experts, including George Noory, and many more of some of the most important theorists and scientists in the field. Enter to win a free ticket at contactinthedesert.net. See you at Joshua Tree Retreat Center in August for Contact in the Desert, 760-365-8371.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Next up, the incredible story of Shag Harbor. That's on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're back with Joe Montaldo, and he heads up an organization called the International Community for Alien Research. Joe, Shag Harbor, an incredible story that occurred in October of 1967. What kind of work have you been doing in that arena?
You know, we started digging on Shag Harbor back about 10 years ago, as much as, because I've got to be honest with everyone who's listening to us tonight, Shag Harbor is probably one of the best UFO cases there is. Simply for the fact, as I heard George note earlier in the show, there was multiple witnesses to this, and no one reported this as a UFO. Most people thought this was a plane that went down in the harbor. There were several people who went out to investigate it from the weird yellow foams and quite a few other things. But what I found interesting, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've had several people come forward now. Most of this is really hard to confirm, and a lot of this we're still working on confirming. Okay. There was a gentleman named Marsh who came forward and said he was one of the divers present when this thing was parked off the coast of Nova Scotia.
And let's review just real quickly, Joe, what happened. October 1967, a UFO about 60 feet in diameter was hovering over the water near this tiny fishing village called Shag Harbor in Nova Scotia.